Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
5, 6, 7, 8. Da dun 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 da dun dun dun. Dun da dun 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 dun. Ba ba
ba ba ba ba ba ba. Poor Kathleen.
Kathleen's like top of the third. I got this.
Wait, I like couldn't think of what I was supposed to do next.
Nothing really.
No.
That wait, who's gonna keep the bed going? Okay, so we are in the middle of
This is for real.
Yeah. This is the thing that's actually happening right now.
Ambush! We're in the middle of dealing with different, like, we're getting our audio from different websites now. We have a whole subscription as a company. And while we're dealing with the mess of that, thought it would just be easier to not... we're bedless today.
Yeah, we're bedless today, so we decided to be our own bed.
I don't know if regular people know what bedless means. I don't work in this industry.
That thing you're missing, that's a bed.
So like in music that's bed. A good point. Yeah, so in radio, like music that goes underneath like commercials or you talking or whatever is called a bed. It's stuff that you lay everything else on top of. So
sort of like the bed you sleep on.
Yeah. So Lily Allen's blank U is what we've been using, but the waters got all muddied and we had to change services. Long story. So
wait, anyway. should we try that again?
No, that was perfect.
Now that I know what's going on.
And then you can pot it down. Pot it down. There you go. Okay.
Oh my God. I was hoping you weren't going to figure out that was going to be my secret code, so I just got to muddle into the mic the entire time.
What's up? It's an Acquired Taste podcast. I'm Bethany. Kathleen is over there in her crisp white shirt.
Hey.
Crisp.
Sam is over there in her star hoodie.
Star hoodie.
And this week, we are talking about unethical scientific studies.
Which are fascinating.
Because we sort of fell into this topic last week. We were talking about something that I don't remember because I have the memory of a goldfish, but like a goldfish with a memory problem.
You're Dory.
So I really am.
I've seen that movie.
Yeah. So we were all tasked with finding an unethical study that they would never do nowadays.
Right.
And it's fascinating what scientists used to do to people.
Yes.
And I specified it has to be about people because I cannot handle studies that have to do with animals.
Those also exist. And let's not get started on those.
Yeah.
So the reason these are found to be unethical is because most of the scientists realized it afterwards because the results are always mind-blowing and there's nothing like this has ever happened before. So most of these are really, really old. Should we maybe just recap on the unplanned ones we dropped last week?
Yeah. So for example, we talked about the visual cliff. That's the baby one we talked about.
That's right.
So the visual cliff, and I got this information from Wikipedia. So the visual cliff was created by two psychologists at Cornell University, Eleanor J. Gibson and Richard D. Walk, and they wanted to investigate depth perception in both humans and people.
Both of them.
Those are the same.
I love when they come together.
In both humans and animals. And the way that it was set up was it was a sheet of plexiglass that covered a cloth with a super high contrast checkerboard pattern. And on one side, the cloth was placed right below the plexiglass. And then on the other, it dropped about 4 feet. And so they were hypothesizing that you don't learn depth perception. You're actually born with it. But they wanted to test this. Mm-hmm. So they put 36 kids.
Babies, right?
Babies.
We're up to, can you imagine at the board meeting, like, I got this. We're going to take 36 babies.
Yeah. They were 6 to 14 months of age. They put them on the shallow side of the visual cliff. And then a caregiver, usually a parent, stood on the other side of the plexiglass and like somehow got them to crawl over. And it was assumed that if the kid didn't want to crawl to the caregiver, he or she could tell that there was depth and they thought that they would fall off the cliff, right?
Yeah.
They found that 27% of the infants crawled over to their mother on the deep side without any problem. Mm-hmm. A few of them crawled, but were like not really
happy about it.
And then some infants completely refused to crawl because they were confused that it seemed like they were about to fall.
I picture a tiny baby middle finger.
Yeah.
It's like, come here.
Yeah. And then some of the babies actually were smart enough to like pat the glass. Like, yes. And could tell there was something there, but they still wouldn't cross.
That's fascinating for a child that young.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So it basically showed that when healthy infants are able to crawl, they can perceive depth.
I love that.
There was a bunch more. They did it with animals. They did it with kids who aren't able to crawl yet. They said that the infants exhibited distress less frequently when they were placed on the shallow side than when they were placed on the deep side.
Gosh.
So even babies who can't crawl can still perceive depth and be like, what the f-?
Yeah.
I'm hovering.
Which is really just mean because you're causing babies
strong
emotional amounts of stress.
Turmoil, yeah. Which is sort of the underlying factor in a lot of these psychological studies, is that the damage you're doing on your patients that you're doing the study on far exceeds whatever scientific gains you'll get from
it. Yeah.
It's just, no one sees this coming.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
So another one we spoke about, which is one of my favorites of all time. I'm sorry that I'm just really entertained, guys. This is not okay. But if I laugh, that's why.
You're laughing because you're uncomfortable?
I'm laughing because I'm so fascinated and uncomfortable at once. Okay, so the Stanford prison experiments, it was for 1 week. The situation only lasted for 7 days, and they tested 24 males and made sure they were the most sound and stable to participate in this. So they thought they were covering all of their bases. So 12 of them were created to be inmates, and 12 of them were told they were prison guards.
Okay.
And prison, quote unquote, was just a wing in the psychology ward. This was...
Oh, it wasn't actually a prison.
No, it wasn't even an actual prison. They were just really curious to see how, you know, it was going to pan out. So the results, also by Wikipedia. God, so glad I discovered this website today.
Well, how great. Support them. Give them your money.
It'll catch on. It said, after a relatively uneventful first day, on the second day, prisoners in cell one blockaded their cell door with beds and took off their stocking caps, refusing to come out. So then it just kind of evolved from there. Some of the guards decided to make a room for prisoners who were behaving themselves and weren't part of the riot, and they got special treatment and good food. They were, the other ones were forced to repeat their cell number over and over and over, taking away their identity and just giving them a number. After only 36 hours in, one prisoner began to act crazy, as one of the inmates described. Number 8612 then began to act crazy, to scream, to curse, to go into a rage that seemed out of control. It took quite a while before we became convinced that he was really suffering and we had to release him. This was 36 hours in. So these students were taking on the role of they were taking these different roles to heart.
If you were told you were a prisoner, you mentally became a prisoner. If you're told you were a guard, you mentally became
a guard.
Someone
went on a hunger strike.
Oh my gosh.
I like to think that I would have the wherewithal to do an experiment within an experiment.
What would you do?
So if I were a prisoner, I'd be like, okay, I'm going to act really crazy. And then they're going to come up with some scientific reason why I'm acting crazy. But in my mind, I know that I'm doing an experiment right back at them.
Part of me wonders, like, if you've ever been, have you guys ever been hypnotized?
No.
Okay, so I have. And the crazy thing about hypnotism is you never are not in control. You're always in control.
Okay.
But like, you just sort of decide you're going to go along with it. Like, people who do it for those really funny shows of, like, a hypnotist comes to your high school. Act like a chicken. You don't, it's not something you can't control. You just kind of get into this place of like, it's become socially acceptable because everyone believes you're hypnotized. So you're like, why the hell not? I'm just going to act like a chicken. And you do. And so you do it.
Right.
And so part of me wonders.
But are you hypnotized?
In theory, you could argue that you are because you're so relaxed that you're like allowing the suggestion to happen, but it's not happening against your will. You're letting it happen.
Well, the power of the mind.
Right. So I wonder if like for these guys who were inmates, if they were like, you know what? I'm just going to go along with this and I'm going to go crazy.
There are interviews. If you look it up, you can find videos, and that's actually not what any of them reported afterwards.
Really?
They were in, they felt in serious distress afterwards. There were even sessions to help undo some of the mental strain it put on a few of these people. And then associates of the prisoners and the guards were interviewed, and the guards' friends were like, I found out what he did. He's not that person. I had no idea. Like, they just began. It's the saying is the power of the mind.
Wow.
Like, we have no idea.
I don't know what's worse, coming out of an experiment like the Stanford experiment, being a prisoner and feeling traumatized because you were abused by other humans, or being a guard and having to live the rest of your life knowing what you did to another human.
I can't pick.
I know a guy who is a prison guard. And in high school, he was normal, and he is a giant a-hole now.
Oh,
and you can tell he's like the guy who always wanted power, and now he got it.
Yeah.
And it got to his head. And I'm absolutely not saying that that's the way that like all prison guards are or anything like that, but like there's a certain type of person where once they get power, it gets to that. We've seen that with artists who come in.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, it's not the artist, it's their management. There mm-hmm. are times when artist management, they get a little bit of power and they become terrible to work with because now they have power that they never had before.
See, these kinds of experiments also justify one of my biggest pet peeves, and I hate when I'm talking about a movie or watching a movie or a show or even the news, something that really happened with someone who's so certainly and personally smugly goes, well, if I were in that situation, I would have, or obviously that's going to happen. Yeah. They should have blank. And that
you don't know.
Makes me twitch because I'm like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You don't know. That person doesn't know. Like, when put under extreme stress and strain in these circumstances, you can't imagine.
Yeah.
You also can't imagine how you were going to act. So when you make that comment and I give you like a bye Felicia face, you know what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
That's why. And my mom's the worst in horror movies. She's like, why would they just obviously don't do that? I'm like, oh yeah, because you have the violins to know not to do that.
Yeah.
It's so different. These social situations, they're just,
you just don't know. Kathleen, what study did you research?
Okay, so I couldn't stop reading everything essentially about this topic, but the unethical psychological experiment that I researched was the bystander effect.
Oh, fascinating.
So this is about a murder in New York City in 1964, and a 28-year-old woman, her name is Kitty Genovese, was murdered, and people in New York City watched from the street as they could see the murder happening in her apartment window, and nobody did anything.
I think there's a documentary that her brother did that just came out not too long ago.
Really?
Yeah.
See, okay, so I've heard of this one. What was everyone's reasoning for? I mean,
you know, because I don't think that there was a reasoning, but then two doctors, John Darley and Bibb, and I'm going to butcher his last name, Bibb Latane. They developed interest in what was going on with what they were calling the bystander effect. And they started doing these experiments where they would put somebody in a room and let smoke slowly creep into the room. And when it was one person, they reported that smoke almost right away. But when it was a bunch of people, it took a much longer time for them to report smoke. Or they did things like, you're sitting in a room and you can hear somebody in distress in the next room. Do you say anything? And when it's a large group of people, you're less likely to say anything.
Oh, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because you just assume you're like, well, someone else will do it.
That's actually what people who were tenants from this building were questioned about, interviewed later. They reported with, well, I thought someone else would do it.
Yeah.
Someone else is going to make the call.
Isn't that fascinating?
Don't be that someone else.
Yeah, I know.
Don't ever be someone else in a situation.
This happens a lot at my therapist's office.
I'm sorry.
So like at my therapist's office, there's an elevator, but it's in a really old building. And so it takes forever. And so a lot of times people will use the stairs. But if the floor doesn't have that door open, it's locked from the stairwell side. It's you can only open it from the office like lobby.
Okay.
And so there'll be a bunch of us all sitting there waiting to go in and see our therapists. And someone will knock on the door and everyone just sort of looks at each other. But if you're the only one there, you'll go and open the door. It happens every single week.
So cool.
It's just like everyone just kind of becomes like, who's going to do? And I think it's that fear of going out on a limb and being somebody who stands out.
That's insane.
There's like a line graph that's really similar. I forget the name of it, but there were about 18 people in a room, and this was done several times, and 17 of them were part of the experiment, and there was one person being experimented on, and there was lines A, B, and C, and they were just showed the lines on the wall, and it said write in order from biggest to smallest, and then stand up if line A is whatever, and then everyone would agree for the first like eight, and then eventually they would list the shortest as the tallest, and it's something so plain as day right in front of your face, and almost if not everyone started to agree with the group. Like, stand up if B is the tallest, clearly the shortest, and everyone would stand up.
Yeah, I read about this. So it was one subject and the rest of them were actors.
Yeah, the rest of them were part of the study.
That's amazing.
Like, what would I do? You see some people starting to laugh or like pupils dilate and they're looking around.
Well, you start to question yourself if other people don't react the way that you think that you should react. Then you go, oh, like, am I interpreting this wrong?
Yes. Yeah. Am I an idiot?
It's am I
fascinating.
Okay, so one that we talked about, we touched on last week, that is like sort of the most unethical of all unethical studies is the Milgram experiment. And this is an experiment that studied obedience to authority figures. And again, this is taken from Wikipedia. So it happened at Yale, and they were trying, it happened in the wake of Nazi Germany. And war criminal Adolf Eichmann was under trial. And Milgram, this scientist, was looking to answer the question, was Eichmann and his million accomplices in the Holocaust just following orders? Because you heard that from these Nazi soldiers saying, I was just following orders. And so this guy, Stanley Milgram, wanted to study, is that like legit a thing, or are they just using it as an excuse? Okay. So here's the experiment.
She's like me. You're laughing.
So unethical. It's like frightening. So three people were involved. The person running the experiment, an actor who was pretending to be a volunteer, and the actual volunteer who had no idea what was going on. So both volunteers would draw slips of paper to determine their roles. All of the slips of paper said teacher, but the actors said that their paper said learner. This made sure that the actor was always the one behind the wall getting shocked.
Right.
And the actual volunteer was the teacher. Mm-hmm. Okay, does that make sense?
Yes.
It's a little, it gets a little confusing. Okay. So next, the teacher and the learner were taken into a room where the learner, again, this is the actor, was strapped into what appeared to be an electric chair. Then the teacher and the learner were put into separate rooms where they could communicate, but they couldn't see each other. So in one version of the experiment, the actor was sure to mention to the volunteer that he had a heart condition. The teacher was given a list of word pairs that he was to teach the learner. Mm-hmm. So he began by reading the list of word pairs to the learner, and then he would read the first word and four possible answers. The learner, again, this is the actor, would press a button to indicate his response. And if the answer was incorrect, the teacher, the real volunteer, would have to give a shock. And every time he shocked the person, the voltage increased 15 volt increments wrong answer. And then if they were right, he would read the next word pair. So the subjects believed that for each wrong answer, the learner was actually getting shocked.
Oh my God.
There was no actual shock. And then after the actor was separated from the subject, this is the worst part, he set up a tape recorder which played pre-recorded sounds for each shock level. And after a certain voltage level, the sounds stopped. There were some times where he would complain about his heart condition, bang on a wall, and then it would get really quiet. Mm. Some test subjects paused at 135 volts, but most continued after being assured that they wouldn't be held responsible. The total experiment was halted after the subject had given the maximum 450 volt shock three times in a row.
Truly believing they're doing this to someone.
Yes.
Hearing the person screaming, reacting, asking them to stop the suffering.
Yes.
Believing it's all real.
Yes.
Kept going.
So the experiment found unexpectedly that a very high proportion of people were prepared to obey, albeit unwillingly, even if apparently causing serious injury and distress. But this is one of the experiments that raised major ethical questions in
no
scientific
kidding.
Experiments.
Yeah.
Because they put these people under incredible emotional and like crazy stress.
Yeah.
So that's the Milgram experiment. It's fascinating. That's just like a brief overview of it, but we studied this in my AP Psych class in high school because yeah. it's one of those things where you're like, I would never do that.
Yep.
But they had a script that like the administrator would say, like if you said, I don't want to do this anymore, he would say, please continue.
Yep.
If you said, I don't want to do it, he would say the experiment requires that you continue. If you said a third time, I don't want to, he said, it is absolutely essential that you continue. And if you were like, no, he said, you have no other choice. You must go on. And then they did.
That's it. They're just a prisoner of a script. That's as simple as it is. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
These, I mean, I think I have so much fun thinking about these, pardon the phrasing, because I took a class on these early experiments and all of these have footage because the
yeah.
point was to observe human interaction with these. So if you're curious enough, like I remember sitting in the class and seeing these, what we're talking about, as movies, and it made you sweat and it made you anxious and it made you mad and it shocked you. But it's these are things that if you just want to learn more about it,
yeah.
Google, you can find these. They're documented. These
yeah.
are videos. So this one, the one I found, was always really interesting to me, and it's because I blame all of my fears on it. Like, I tell my parents, they turn me into such a scaredy cat.
Yeah.
So it's the Little Albert study.
Okay, I never heard of this before.
You haven't?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's ironic, because it was performed by John B. Watson.
Oh!
How you doing, brother?
Probably a relative.
So it was published in 1920.
Oh, damn,
so
early.
We're going back.
Okay.
So the doctor was just trying to figure out if he could elicit a specific fear, if he could create a fear in someone. And they used a 9-month-old named Albert and a white rat. So Albert was in the room with the white rat, and Albert had no problem with it. And he thought it was actually kind of cute, I guess, because he went to reach for Albert.
Yeah.
And every time, the rat rather, every time Albert touched the rat, the people from the test would be behind Albert with a pipe and a hammer.
What the hell?
And they'd hit that pipe as hard as they could. So a poor 9-month-old Albert would touch the rat and then hear this crazy sound right behind him and then start bawling.
Of course, because he's scared.
Because he's 9 friggin' months old. This happened several times. He'd leave the rat. Everything would be fine. He'd be cautious but want to touch the rat. Boom! Baby crying.
Oh,
baby
my
screaming.
God.
It was so wildly successful. They'd put the rat in the room after a while, and Albert would just start bawling because
oh,
he knew what would come.
Poor God.
The only problem is this was stronger than they thought it was going to be, and Albert actually, once he was released, which was about a year old, was scared of all things white and fluffy. So that extended to bunny rabbits, to white dogs. He would even start bawling if he saw a Santa Claus mask.
Oh my God.
Because he would just associate it so strongly. It would just put that fear into his body, which he so clearly didn't have in the beginning. So Watson was really upset with the long-term effects.
No kidding.
Yeah, right. And I'm not sure what actually was done later on, but he published that he is now looking to create experiments to undo what he did, which, you know, poor Albert, you're going to experiment
aww.
On him more. Where is it? What happened to Albert? That's
can you
what I
imagine
really want to know.
Albert as an adult and somebody puts a marshmallow in front of him and he just starts crying,
like bawling? So this is like the opposite of Pavlov's dog, basically.
I think that was one of the things that inspired him to do it.
Because that was like the 1890s, I think.
That was like,
Pavlov's dog.
Really?
I think so.
Okay, so maybe it was, but since it's so close in time, maybe that was what it, he was just trying to elicit a response, except instead of a positive one, like
Jesus.
Mouth-watering for a pup, he scared the living crap out of poor little Albert. So we can put fear into people. Don't
yeah.
do this stuff at home,
well,
please.
It's really similar, actually, to like if you are around a toddler and the toddler runs, and falls and then looks at you, the way you react is going to dictate how the toddler reacts.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
if you're like, then the kid starts to cry because you're scared. But if you're like, oh, you're fine, baby, it's okay, come on. They, unless they're like really hurt, you know, they'll be like, okay.
Or like when I'm driving and there's like a close call, you know, like a car cuts in front of you or something. If the passenger in my car goes, holds the seat, you know, takes a deep breath, I'm just like, I freeze up too.
Yep.
So a lot of it is, other people looking for approval from other people.
Yeah.
Seeing other people's
fascinating.
Reactions.
Okay, so this is the last one. Speaking of long-term effing up of people.
Yeah!
Okay. Have you guys heard of the monster study?
No.
No!
Okay. This is named because the dude who did this research, his colleagues were so, like,
outraged
that they were like, you're a monster.
Oh my gosh, what is
okay,
this?
Okay. So this is from a Mental Floss article written by Meredith Danko. So in 1939 at the University of Iowa, a researcher named Wendell Johnson wanted to discover the cause of stuttering. He and his researchers decided that they would try and turn a group of orphans into stutterers.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
So they took 22 kids. They divided them in half. 12 of the kids did not have stutters at all. Half of the kids were given positive feedback. They were told their speech was fluent and fabulous, that they spoke really, really well. The other group were constantly told that they had stutters and that their speech was, quote, as bad as people say.
No!
Okay. So none of this resulted in any of the non-stutters developing stutters. So Wendell was probably like super disappointed because he was like, oh, I didn't give anyone a stutter. However, the kids who were treated negatively and told that they stuttered did develop huge self-esteem problems.
That guy.
Oh my God.
They had lasting issues. They didn't want to talk around their friends anymore. They said that they had a hard time finding words, that it felt like words were stuck in their mouths now, like nothing would come out because they were fine, but then suddenly told that they were terrible speakers and had stutters. So this happened in 1939. In August 2007, six of the orphan children were awarded a total of $925,000 by the state of Iowa for lifelong psychological and emotional scars.
Collect money!
I know, caused by 6 months of torment during the Iowa University experiment. So the study learned that although none of the children became stutterers, they became self-conscious and reluctant to speak at all.
Which is a trap inside your own head.
I know.
What happened to him after that? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't know.
I hope he never got to study
But yeah,
again.
His colleagues were like, dude, really, Wendell?
That's the only one we've discussed where someone went in with vicious intent in a study. Like a lot of these, it was a horrible outcome and the testers were like, crap, what the hell? This is, you're an a**hole.
I know.
Sir.
I'm fascinated to hear what the type of careers that those children went on to have in their adult lives. So I'm going to have to read up on that.
There's like certain trigger words that if you're like telling a story and you want the story to be extra sad, and one of those words is orphans, like your life is already tough.
Yeah.
I forgot they were orphans.
They were orphans.
Wait a minute.
It's like, and if so, I mean, the good thing that comes out of this is like there was some legitimate scientific understanding that came as a result, albeit at a very high cost, but also especially the Milgram experiment, like it really brought to issue, listen, you can't do whatever the hell you want to do. I know it's the 60s and the 70s and you're all on acid, but you don't get to do whatever you want to do with people who are unsuspecting.
Afterwards. Listen, I know it's the 60s and 70s and you're on acid.
And professors wear corduroy bell bottoms.
I mean, the only thing...
I've seen this dirty movie before.
Yeah, I know. And turtlenecks.
It's just, if there's a silver lining, and because we're looking for it, these are still things that are taught in our classrooms and colleges today.
Yeah.
So at least it wasn't done and forgotten, thus kind of allowing it to be in a weird way done again.
Right.
That's really interesting. It's you know, there is something to gain at the end of it. I'm so sorry for every individual family and person who had to suffer because of it.
But every freshman in college has learned a lot about themselves and about the world.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is where Harry Potter, the forbidden spells come from. I feel like there are several, I think it's 4. I'm really sorry to all real Harry Potter fans.
Wait, I feel like you're about to ruin it for me because I've never read Harry Potter.
No, it's just part of the spells. There's just forbidden spells in one of them. It's like, you don't do that spell. Oh, okay. You know, gotcha. It. You're not allowed to do those spells.
And then,
like,
of course, you want to
There's only
it.
A few of them.
Yeah.
And I feel I've associated them with learning about them. I'm like, it's like the forbidden experiments.
Forbidden. Well, those are unethical scientific studies today.
Don't do
I
this
hope you
at
enjoyed
home.
Them. No, don't do or to anyone you love.
I'm going to start performing small experiments in my house.
If
on
you
your husband.
Smack every time I eat pizza, I will never forgive you.
Should we go around the room and talk about what we learned this week, ladies?
Yeah.
Okay. Can I tell you what I learned? I'm really excited about
Yes.
it.
Yes.
Please do.
Okay. So you know the term jaywalking?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Do you ever know where that term came from?
No.
Okay. So I just learned this. Back in the day, I think early 1900s, like into whatever. Anyway, cars were being used more and more, but pedestrians were just used to the roads being for them.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
So people were getting hit by cars all the time.
Jeez.
And you didn't have to learn how to drive a car. You didn't have to get like a license or go through class. You were taught how to drive by the car salesman.
Ah.
So people weren't signaling or stopping. They were just like, you wouldn't look, like if you were going to walk into the street, you would just step into the street because you just assumed a car wasn't going to be
road.
There. Right,
this
it's
is
my
where I
road.
Walk,
right?
Yeah.
And they could not get people to realize that the roads weren't for them anymore. The people were like, no, the roads are for us. It's my right to walk in the middle of the street or for my kid to play in the middle of the street. It's my right.
Oh, yes.
Rawr, I'm an American.
Yeah.
And kids were being killed and adults were being killed
oh,
and maimed
gosh.
And whatever, whatever. So they finally had to do like this. They had to shame people into not walking across the street except at crosswalks.
Social experiments.
And they did it by calling these people Jays. At the time, a Jay was like a loser, like a silly person, like an idiot, like a redneck, like a backwards person.
What?
So if you were accused of jaywalking, that was basically saying you're a dumbass.
Oh no, that's a dunce cap.
And people were being publicly accused of being jaywalkers or Jays, and that's what it took to get people to not jaywalk or only walk in the middle of crosswalks.
The original
psychological
experiment.
It's basically like if you cross in the middle of the street and a cop was like, dumbass! And then all your friends laughed at you.
You will not make this putt,
that's what
jackass.
This is. And then the game Red Light, Green Light.
Yeah.
Yes.
That game came from schools where they were teaching children when streetlights finally came out. They
what?
Were trying to teach children to obey the rules because
mind blown!
People wouldn't pay attention to the streetlights unless a cop was there. They're like, a streetlight's not going to tell me
what?
You can't tell me what to do, you machine.
You mean it's not just a game for teachers to fill time and they don't know what else to do?
They were actually like basically indoctrinating children into a street safety because so many people were being randomly hit by cars. So
wow. Shout I guess
out,
it worked.
Yeah. So I learned so much. So shout out to the Dollop podcast for teaching me all of that.
Podcast.
I love the Dollop. Okay. What did you guys learn this week?
I learned, and actually I've known this for a while, but I want to share it. And it's sort of on the forefront of my mind right now because I'm planning a vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to plan a vacation is to go on Instagram and type in the location hashtag wherever you're going, hashtag Florida.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then through that hashtag, you can see what other people are doing in the area that you're going to.
That's a great idea.
See what type of photos that they're taking, what kind of restaurants they're visiting. Like when I'm in Charleston, I'm always doing hashtag Charleston to see what people are doing. So this summer I'm going to Italy. So I've been doing hashtag Florence or hashtag
I don't know. I'm Norwegian.
Yeah, the beautiful part. And I did this a lot when I was in Ireland a few summers ago. It's literally the best way to do what the locals do or do these cool hidden things that you didn't read about in your Rick Steves book.
Awesome.
All right.
Sam, what'd you learn this week?
So I'm going to start with I owe both of you, especially Bethany, an apology.
What?
In the age-old saying, don't knock it till you try it, you guys, yesterday I watched and loved a Lifetime movie.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was so great. I forget what it was actually called. I think it was Woman Captivated or like Captive Woman or something. I don't know. It was bad for all the best reasons, yeah. And I thoroughly enjoyed that movie.
You're
and I made
great.
Fun of them for so long.
It's always like a woman who's the underdog rises above and becomes the hero of the story, triumphant, is the ruler of the world, and then everybody lives happily ever after.
Yeah, yeah, and someone got hit in the face with a pan.
Oh, nice.
I know, right? Okay, so definitely, we gotta wrap this up. Damn! Okay, follow us on Twitter at Acquired Podcast.
On Instagram, Acquired Taste Podcast.
Find us on Facebook, Acquired Taste Podcast.
And AcquiredTastePodcast.com.
And you can listen to us how?
On iTunes.
And
iHeart
Radio.
Thanks.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together. Because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.